In 1999, David Elliott was mustering sheep on his property near Winton in outback Queensland when he came across an unusual pile of what looked like rocks. In fact, it was rocks and fossilised dinosaur bone, a giant femur from a Cretaceous sauropod that roamed the area 95 million years earlier. That find changed David's life, and with it, the farmer whose family had been on the land around Winton for generations revived paleontology in Australia. David and his wife Judy founded the Australian Age of Dinosaurs Museum of Natural History, which for several years operated on their property where they conducted digs and stored and prepared the regular supply of bones. Today, the museum is the world's largest collection of Australia's largest dinosaur fossils. And David and Judy are onto the last leg of the vision, a massive new natural history museum built on dinosaur country. David's been recognised for his contributions to science with an Order of Australia Medal in 2015. And in 2024, David Elliott is Australia's local hero. David Elliott, welcome to The Year That Made Me.
Yeah, thank you, Gillian.
David, tell us a little bit more about your life in what we could call the pre-dinosaur era.
A lot less stressful than it is now. It was, you know, I grew up on the land, so I always loved the land and always loved what I was doing. But it was basically chasing sheep and cows, you know, building dams, building fences, you know, what you do on a property, you know. We did all our own work, so I was always busy. And we bought a property, the property that I sort of spent most of my working life on was called Belmont, and it was pretty run down when I bought it, which meant I could afford it. And then basically you spend your life building it up. And until I was in about my mid-40s when the Australian Age of Dinosaurs sort of kicked off, and that sort of turned everything on its head a bit, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having two jobs.
David, were dinosaurs sort of a big thing for you before the big find?
No, definitely not. I was always interested in fossils, but fossils, anything to do with natural history. So a fossilized bivalve or a leaf or any little thing like that, I was pretty fascinated with it. I picked it up, brought it home, put it on little shelves, you know. I always loved it. And fossilized bone, not being dinosaur bone, that was pretty cool. But it wasn't just dinosaurs as such, you know, it was just fossils in general. Anything to do with something that's extinct near fascinated me.
And was coming across bones and things like that pretty regular for you and maybe other farmers in the area before the big find?
No, it wasn't really. I had started finding a few bones by the time we found those bigger bits. There was the one they called Elliot that was at the time Australia's largest dinosaur. But that was the seventh that I'd found. So, you know, I knew what I was looking for by then. And in the early days, you didn't really know, you know. So it was only really when you get to know the type of rocks and you can just pick it, you know. But no one else had really found anything around the district. There was nothing else happening, no.
So tell us a bit more about that process from you find something one day when you're out on the property. How long did it take for you and others to realise that what you actually found was something really hugely significant?
Took a couple of years, actually, because we collected it and it sat on a ping pong table in our house for a couple of years. And Judy and I, because there's lots of just chunks of bone, you know, and some bits fitted together and some bits don't. And so we were trying to fit them together, and we got a few bits together and a few bits we couldn't. And after a while, we got a bit sick of it and it just sat there. And it wasn't until we had a paleontologist called Dr. Mary Wade, and she came out because I contacted the Queensland Museum, and I think they contacted her. And she said, oh, that's a big dinosaur, you know. And she told the Queensland Museum. Queensland Museum came out in 2001 in June and got all excited about it because of its size. And then we had a little dig in 2001 in September. So that was more or less what got us into it, I guess. You know, it's probably seeing the excitement of the Queensland Museum is what really got me, because you don't realise it's something good. You know, you think, oh, that stuff's everywhere probably, but it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. We're speaking with David Elliott, Australia's local hero for 2024. And David, you've got us up to when Mary Wade's come out to the property and you're starting to deal with the Queensland Museum. It's not long after that you and your wife Judy developed the idea of a dinosaur museum in Winton. How did that idea come about?
Probably a bit the same thing, just that excitement of everybody, because the Queensland Museum had a public dig in 2002. So they had all these people come and they charged them about $1,650 for memory for the week. And out they came, and it was very well publicised and it was pretty full on, you know, and there was so much excitement. Everyone, there was television crews and all sorts of stuff there. And they sort of realised, I said, you know, what we've got here, especially knowing that I had quite a few more sites around the place, you know. It's a shame to see this leave the district, but by the same token, there's no point in having privately owned dinosaur bones. It's got to be a public body, you know, like for science, in like a public museum for a scientist, say, to describe new species and things. So we had an agreement with the Queensland Museum that they would take all the fossils and they would prepare them, and we would get a replica of them, and then we were going to do a little dinosaur museum in town. We were going to raise $100,000 to build a little dinosaur museum in town. That was our goal. That was in, I think it was incorporated in October 2002.
It's fair to say it's got away from you a bit from that little vision, hasn't it? Because give us a vision, I suppose, of what the dinosaur museum was at the beginning, what it is today, and then also what you'd like it to be.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you look at what we've got there now and you from your little original idea, and it's massive. You know, so you could never believe that it could have got so big, and yet we're not there yet. You know, we still haven't actually built a museum, but it's a very comprehensive infrastructure here that we have got already, you know. So it's exciting. It's good. It's exciting. And it's a funny thing. It's easy now to promote the museum that it was 20 years ago when all you had was a good idea, you know. Now that you're getting runs on the board, you've got something you can look back and people can see that we're going somewhere. They can see what's happening over time, and they can see that this actually is something of merit. It's sort of like proof of concept, you know.
In 2024, David, you're officially a local hero. Were you always a local hero in terms of what the other people around the area thought when you started getting into the paleontology business?
No, not really. Actually, a bit the opposite, really. I think there was a lot of skepticism in the district at the time, you know, of what we were doing, because they reckon we'd become a national park and, you know, there'd be all this different dramas and, you know, become a sacred site and all this rot that goes on around, you know. And we had to weather that for a while. But people are so supportive now. All the people on the properties are really supportive. I think because of what we're starting to work for the region. And for a long time, when we first started the museum, all we were doing is really feeding off the existing travellers that were already coming here anyway. But now we are starting to create a destination for people to come out in the regions. And that's really important because regional towns and communities are starting to dry out. So we've just got to keep that momentum going and try and, you know, pick up visitation to the whole region to try and keep the towns viable.
So you won them over in the end. Good to hear, David. I began by mentioning the big find in 1999. That was obviously a pivotal moment in your life. But what have you chosen, David, as the year that made you?
I've chosen 2006 because that was the year that the museum changed direction. My whole life really changed direction for several really significant reasons.
Tell us about it.
Well, it was a combination of a few things. I found a new dinosaur site. We dug it in 2006. We found 17 pallets of bones of a new species of sauropod dinosaur. So there was another one. On top of that, one of the neighbours across the other side of Winton contacted Judy and I, and we went there on New Year's Day in 2006. And that was, there's this huge site, and we ended up digging that in 2006 in June. That was two species. There was one we call Australovenator wintonensis, which is a meat-eating dinosaur, and Dimetanosaurus matildae, which is another sauropod. So suddenly we had three new species in 1 year, and we're this tiny little organisation in the middle of nowhere. We had no prep lab, and we had so much stuff. There was too much to send to the Queensland Museum. The Queensland Museum scientist said to me, look, there's no point in taking this back. You know, you might as well keep it and see what you can do with it. So that's what we did. And we started a prep lab in our shed. So we cleaned all the tractors out of my old shed, old dirt floor, and made some prep tables and set up an air compressor. And away we were. We set up our own little prep lab out at Belmont.
And that really, I suppose, in a way, was the seed of paleo tourism for your area. What sort of people started coming, and how's that changed over the years?
Well, it's changed a bit, I suppose. In those days, we had people would come out to the property, they'd stay in the shearer's quarters, or they'd bring their caravans and camp up at the shearing shed, and they would come across our little shed every day, and they'd prep dinosaur bones. And we had over 100 people over there, like 100 different people, you know, like, and they used to come every year or sometimes several times a year. And so we started getting a fair bit done. In fact, most of the holotype specimens of Dimetanosaurus and Savannosaurus were done in our shed because there was no public coming as such. It wasn't open to the public because we're out on a private property 80 kilometres from nowhere, you know, so it was a little bit not an easy place for people to get to anyway, and we couldn't have controlled it. So that's how we started, yeah. And we realised at this time that there was much more to Australian Age of Dinosaurs than a little regional museum. We realised this, we've got to do something more. And so we started thinking about how we were going to do a big picture museum. And like something that, and I always wanted it to have its own identity. And I wanted to be out in the wilderness somewhere, not in a town. I thought, well, natural history's got nothing to do with civilizations, you know. It belongs in nature. There's these beautiful mesas around Winton. So I started contacting a couple of landowners around. And there was one I met and he wasn't interested. So we tried another fellow, and his name is Peter Britton. Peter and Carol Britton owned Mount Lansborough, and they also owned a block that had this beautiful big mesa on it. And it was about 6 kilometres off the main road going towards Longwich and about 25 kilometres from Winton. And I rang Peter up and I said, Peter, would you be interested in selling us a little bit of that mesa? So I told him about what we wanted to do. And there's this silence, and he said, nah, I don't want to sell it. And I thought, oh, well, that's the end of that. You know, I said, well, no worries. And then he said, but I might give it to you. And he did. Peter and Carol Britton donated 1,400 hectares. They donated this beautiful mesa to us. And, you know, when I came up and had a look with him. He drove me around. He said, do you reckon it's any good for you, son? I said, Peter, you got no idea. It was like the mesas around Winton, though, you know, they're probably, you know, between 50 to 70 metres high, and they've just got a hard rock top, you know, so they're like a plateau. And that plateau represents the Earth's surface about 20 to 30 million years ago. And, you know, when I looked at this beautiful mesa, and it's just cliffs and gorgeous, and you're standing back in time, and suddenly it just turned the whole museum around. The museum suddenly became a big thing, you know, and that was the biggest turning point, even bigger than finding the new dinosaurs. You know, that donation of that land to the museum is what has made Australian Age of Dinosaurs today.
So that's two very big developments in 2006. But wait, there's more, David Elliott, because you also took some time off in 2006 and you found the site of a meteor.
That's right. On the 31st of March in 2004, a big fireball came in over Winton. A big meteorite came in over, you know, like rolling thunder, and everyone saw it up in the sky and they thought it was plane crashing and all that sort of stuff, you know. I didn't see it. I didn't even hear it. We were in the house and we didn't even see it or hear it. But everyone rang and said, oh, is it, you know, did you see that? And I said, no. But, oh my God, I talked to so many people in the district and they were so excited about it. And it fascinated me. I was on the phone for 2 hours that night. And then I went out that night to check a dam because we were lambing, you know. When you sort of go out during the day, especially if it's a bit hot afternoon, and you don't want to chase the sheep away from the water because there's little lambs there, you know, and you wait till they give them time to get away during the dark. So I used to just go back after tea, go down to check the dams. And when I went out that night, all hair was standing on the back of my neck, and it was really creepy. That night I dreamt where the stupid thing landed. Mm. And it was one of those things, but it was so vivid. It was such a vivid dream that next day when I was doing the waters, I went and drove around. I dreamt that it had fallen up over top of one of the dinosaur decks we had. And it's just, you know, a weird dream. But it was so real that I actually went and looked that next day. And, you know, of course there's nothing there. And I sort of knew there was. I felt a bit foolish driving around actually looking, you know. But anyway, so that was the end of that. And I sort of forgot a bit about it after that. And it wasn't until a bit later on I started talking to, you know, hearing locals talking about it or where they reckoned it had gone and everything. So I decided I'd see if I could track it because I thought, well, it was funny. All the people in the west of the property thought it was going east and the people in the east of the property thought it was going west. And I thought, you know, looking up into the sky, you've got no perception of distance. So I went around and interviewed all these little neighbours and made a little gadget to point at the horizon. And I said, now point up to where the start of the burn is and tell us when it stopped burning about there. And I'd measure the angles and the distance and with a little compass get the exact direction. And when I got all these coordinates, I got Judy to print out a map for me and we put it on a polystyrene lid and I got these kebab sticks. And I thought, that was a malign of sight. So for every property, I'd use two kebab sticks, start of the burn, pointing at this angle and this direction, and the finish of the burn. And I went there and did that. And when I'd finished doing it all, it was all over the shop, as you can imagine. And I thought, well, what do you do now? So I thought, well, all I can do is take an average. So I got all of the sticks from the start of the burn, pulled them all together and tied them together by those little twisties, did the same with the finish of the burn, and then I put a bit of wire straight across the two. And I thought, well, that should give you a bit of an idea of where this thing would have come in. And it pointed pretty well. It's just fractionally north of our house. And I thought, wow. So I thought, well, there's a fair chance that it could be around here somewhere. I just resolved to keep looking all the time when I was mustering, and that Monday I'd find it. And it was in, we were mustering for land marking in 2006. It was almost 2 years later, just a fraction over 2 years later. And we were mustering, and I just cut across a paddock towards a mob of sheep, and I saw a rock. I just looked at it, and I stopped, because I look at any rock I don't know, I stop and look at, you know. And I looked at this rock, and I said, that, I just can't pick that. So I got off, and it was just, you know, I got down on my hands and knees to pull this rock out of the ground. It was buried in the ground a bit. And I pulled it out, and I could see all this dimpled black fusion crust. So I knew exactly what it was before I even pulled it out of the ground. I knew what it was. And that was probably the most exciting thing that I have ever found. Dinosaurs cannot compete with that. You know, it was,
there you go.
It was so good. I was so excited. You know, like, you want to tell someone, hey, you're looking around, no one around, because Judy was mushroom with me, but I was on my own. But you want to tell someone, you know, and I had to get to the sheep. And so I had a rifle on my bike. So I dug a little hole and shoved the butt of the rifle in it and pushed dirt up around it and stamped it with my boots so that I could find the site again. Otherwise, I reckon it was in the middle of nowhere sort of thing. And as I was getting back on the bike to go, I realized where I was. And I was only about 500 meters to the eastern side of the dinosaur dig. And that is the most incredible feeling I've ever had. That, you know, you forget about hair on the back of your neck. It's like, I think every hair on my body stood on end. You know, like, wow. I was just like electric shock. I was just totally blown away. I still can't really come to terms with it, yeah.
What an amazing year. And means you're not just the founder of the Australian Age of Dinosaurs Museum, but also a meteor detective as well. I'll tell you what, David, anyone would have to back you when you go looking for something these days, I would have thought.
No, not really. No, I reckon I've lost my touch. You know, that my boys out in the properties are finding good stuff now, and I never find anything, yeah. No, it's all right. But yeah, so it's just pretty exciting, you know, all of those sort of things that can all happen. It all happened at 1 year, you know. It was such an obvious year for me. I said the world just stopped turning and started going in a different direction, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, things have certainly gone bigger and better for you and for the museum, and obviously there are grand plans still in the pipeline. David, you mentioned looking up at the sky earlier, and that's pretty significant for your property these days, because the MESA that you mentioned, which I think you also refer to as the Jump Up, has also been designated as Australia's first international dark sky sanctuary. Could you tell us about that?
That's right. Yeah, it is. And that was in 2019. We knew there wasn't one, because it's not easy to be a dark sky sanctuary, because you've got to be close enough to a built-up area that can provide all the facilities. You've got to have an education outreach. And we ticked all the boxes. We're about 2 kilometres outside of Winton's light zone, you know. So we're in a particularly dark area. And on top of the MESA is actually amazing, because you don't get that condensation that settles down around the down at ground level. So you actually get a little bit clearer sky. So we've got an observatory here now called the Gondwana Stars Observatory, and we hold astronomy nights at all through the year. Yeah, and it's just a great thing, because it's all natural history and it's all part of our story.
Well, there really is an amazing range of innovations and institutions that you've founded up your way, David. It's been great speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on The Year That Made Me.
Thank you, Julian. Thanks very much.
And David, we always finish up The Year That Made Me by asking our guests to nominate a piece of music for us. 2006 was your year. What piece of music have you chosen for us and why?
I've chosen Looking Forward, Looking Back by Slim Dusty. It probably is the closest thing that I can think of that sort of portrays my life in the last 20 years. You know, it's, you're always looking forward, you're always trying to build, but it's always important that you keep looking back at what you've achieved, and you have to be inspired by what you've achieved in your life. And when I look back at everything I've done, that's exactly how it sort of happens. You know, you keep looking forward, but don't forget where you come from.
Very happy to have a bit of Slim Dusty on a Sunday morning on Sunday Extra. David Elliott, thank you so much again for speaking with us, and congratulations on being Australia's local hero for 2024.
Thank you, Julian.
And here it is, Looking Forward, Looking Back by Slim Dusty.
Looking forward, looking back, I've come a long way down the track. Got a long way left to go, making songs from what I know, making sense of what I've seen. all the love we've had between you and I along the track, looking forward, looking back. There are strange days full of change on the way, but we'll be fine, unlike some. I'll be leaning forward to see what's coming. Looking forward, looking back.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.